You are listening to the Sarah Fader podcast. This is What Anxiety Feels Like. And I'm here with Melissa Woods, who is the author of Getting Past Anxiety, an inspirational novel to reclaim your life. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing great, Sarah. How are you?
You know, I'm doing well. I do need some coffee because coffee is life, you know. But then, you know, it's strange because there are conflicting views on coffee and anxiety. But to me, I can't function without it.
That is so true what you said. They say no alcohol and no coffee, no caffeine.
Totally. And I mean, the alcohol thing I can get behind because I, you know, I grew up in a household where no one drank. And that was like a thing, right? So I get it. Although that's kind of a long story. Like I was in a relationship with an addict, so it kind of turned me off from alcohol.
Yeah, absolutely. That would do it to anybody.
Tell us about the book. The title is really intriguing, and I'd like to know more.
Sure, you bet. Thank you. It is a fictional novel. The title can represent self-help, but I wrote it as a fictional novel because I love, I learn from stories, and I wanted to tell this journey of this character as a story. The characters are fictional, but the healing process of Stella Maris, who's the main character, is my own healing of anxiety. So what it is about is she discovers that she suffers from anxiety when she goes to get on a plane and cannot. And she's actually going, the first chapter is she's going back to New York to see her boyfriend. And she finds, she doesn't understand what's going on because she's never had a panic attack. She's dealt with anxiety in the past, but it's never stopped her from doing anything. And so she goes to a general practitioner and, you know, is saying, "Why? You know, I couldn't get on a plane. I had a panic attack." And so her doctor says, "You know, I'm recommending that you go see a psychiatrist. Why don't you go and talk to them?" And which she did, and prescribed medication, and she did take it, but it happened that it made her symptoms a lot worse. And so she stopped the medication and found a transformational healer to help her on this journey, you know, to uncover the root causes of her anxiety. And the book's about her journey. And it's an inspirational and motivating novel to read. So,
is it influenced by your life? And if so, can you tell us how?
The journey is my own, and it's, I did suffer from anxiety as a child. And you know, just like people in my generation, you know, when I grew up and who I was as a child, even as a person, I'm very sensitive. My parents didn't really, teach me how to, be confident and secure within myself and be empowering. And so with that environment and with me being sensitive, it did, you know, the anxiety showed up, and by me not dealing with it and just, you know, going on with life, it compounded in a way that, eventually I needed to deal with it. So,
mm-hmm. And how did that manifest for you? What were the first symptoms of anxiety that you experienced?
Well, the pivotal point was when I had the panic attack getting on the plane. I have flown before and I love to fly. And, you know, I was going back, like I mentioned, to see my boyfriend, and I could not get on the plane. I was paralyzed. And if anybody has ever suffered a panic attack, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's an out of body experience, you know? So that was very scary to me. And, I didn't know what was going on. And so I just, you know, being who I am, I was confused by it, and I really wanted to, find out what's going on. Why is this happening to me? So,
And so given that you were curious about why, what steps did you take to find out?
Well, again, like I said, I first tried the medication route and it didn't work for me because it just made everything so, you know, so bad. And I found this healer through my massage therapist. And I just, you know, it was, you know, in the beginning, it's not your traditional therapy. And so I was really skeptic about it. And just the level of work that we were going to do is just very scary. So it took a lot of courage and a lot of commitment on my part to open up. And she provided this safe place for me to unwind and unravel and to heal, you know, the issues that I needed to heal, you know, to get to a place to where I wasn't suffering anymore, you know, like I was. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned when we were talking before we started that it impacted your parenting or your relationship with your son.
Oh, yeah, it was big. You know, the big thing to me when I do speak about this is the way that it limited and how I missed out on a lot of things. And one of them was through parenting. My son is now 25, but at the time he was young and I was a single mom. And so how it really affected
raise his hand,
me,
raise his hand right yeah. here, you know,
yeah.
High five.
No, you, yeah. So, you know, and all your listeners too, that are out there, you know, if you do have children and you're on your own raising your child, it's so scary. And you, have this level of responsibility that, you know, can just really impact you in a way that, you know, and then with anxiety on top of it.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Huh? Did you ever, I mean, sometimes I think as a single parent, I think, and just as a parent in general, I think things like, who put me in charge of these people?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know?
No, it's so true, Sarah. You know, you look at this little person and you think, wow, you chose me. Okay. Well, I don't know if that was good or bad, but
totally,
you know, but yeah, you just, it's an out of body experience, like I said. And the biggest place that it impacted, he was a big superstar golfer, you know, when he eventually got into high school. And when he was in junior and in high school is when I was really deep into the anxiety. And, you know, there was times that, I mean, it unraveled so weird. I mean, it started with a panic attack and not getting on the airplane. And then it really showed up to where at times I couldn't even get out of the house.
Wow.
And so when he was golfing, you know, you would have to go to these events. And I could do the ones around, you know, the local, but when we had to go far away, I couldn't do it. I mean, it was like I just couldn't get out. And so he was there by himself with his team, with all the other parents, you know, on the sideline, you know, rooting. And, you know, I was at home, you know, with under the covers feeling guilty and very shameful about it. So I just, you know, it was just really impactful. And he didn't even know that I suffered from anxiety. I didn't even talk to him. I just said, oh, mommy's got a headache today. You know, good luck kind of thing. So, you know, even with the excuses, as you know, as your listeners know as well, you know, you can come up with all kinds of excuses for this stuff. So
for sure. So does he remember you being anxious and now being an adult?
Yes, he does. And he didn't know what was going on. And, you know, now, you know, it was like with him, with everybody, when I wrote this book and it got published, I gave it to the professionals as well, but also to my friends and family. And the common theme, the thread was, I never knew. You seem so put together. I never knew that you suffered from all this. So that's the thing about anxiety that was real prevalent for me is the shame, not being able to talk about it, you know, and so not being able to talk about it isolates you. And then it makes your anxiety worse because you're alone. And it's just, it's like this spiraling down into this funnel. And I needed to find a way out. I wasn't gonna live my life like this, and I wasn't gonna let my child live this life that I was living.
You were not about that life, no, as they say. You were not about that.
No,
life.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, as the youngins say, the millennials. Yeah. So I think. I'm acting like I'm old, you know, that's so silly. I'm only 37. So I think, wow. I think that, you know, that's like 3 decades, right? Three and some change. I think that I'm so immature though, but, I think that there is a commonality. I feel I can relate to this idea of, number one, people not noticing that you were anxious or thinking that you were functional or okay, right? Yeah. And then this idea that, I don't know if this was the case for you, but for me, I became a really good actress.
Oh, yes.
So,
yes.
Right, so I developed this way of pretending that things were fine because I didn't want to show people what was actually happening for fear of being judged as strange.
Oh, absolutely. You are so right on about that. And that is the shame, is you don't know what's going on with you. Mm-hmm. What is wrong with me? It's people are not going to love me or, you know, accept me. Yeah. Or, I mean, there's just, it, like I said, it just unravels, mm-hmm, to a place where, it's just so isolating. I can't, I mean, like I said, your listeners are probably, you know, they're shaking their head as we're shaking our head going, yeah, I totally understand this and get it. The thing here is, and that's one of the reasons why I started writing the book, because I needed a voice with this, with myself. It was part of my healing. And then as I was writing and it was evolving and coming into its own entity, I thought, wow, you know, I could really help some people. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote it through a story, is because you can connect with the character. Self-help books are great. I love them because I read a lot of them. But I just, like I said, wanted to make this a story and for people to connect. And the biggest thing is not to feel alone.
I have right. Absolutely. 100%. That's so true. I have a question for you that is, sure, related to something I'm writing right now. Mm-hmm. And I have this theory that people with anxiety have a heightened sense of intuition. And so, so that what happens to us as people that are anxious is that we're tuned in to so many different things at once. And we are very intuitive, but it's like you're tapped into a lot of people's energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, I mean, is there an overlap between anxiety and intuition? And if so, how do you see that?
No, I agree with you, Sarah. Just being sensitive, like I said, I was a sensitive child. I'm a sensitive person. And what I mean by that too, and it's a good thing, because I am very intuitive. And I think when, you know, that can be a great advantage to situations in your life, if it's with your career or making decisions about, you know, your family or, you know, relationships or whatever. But the other part of that too is I believe being so intuitive that you can also pick up other people's stuff, and you bring that on for yourself. And, you know, if you're not understanding that level, it can be overwhelming to you. Like you said, you could just, you know, it's too much information at once. I mean, it's enough to deal with your own stuff, mm-hmm, but when you've got this collective group around you, and it can even be people that you don't even know that you're walking down the street,
and you can pick something up.
Yeah,
you really do. I think that anxiety is a superpower. You know, because
I know
it really is. Like, I mean, it can be a pain in the ass, but it's also something that, because if you break down anxiety, it's what it is excess energy.
Yeah, it is. It is.
You know, and it and is. Then that's what I've learned. And then, you know, and that energy is, it can be overwhelming because that's the nature of it, right? But for me, I look at it as like, I'm a vessel with all this energy and I need to expend that somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No, it, you know, I've read, there's a lot of theory out there too, that anxiety, people that suffer from anxiety are also very intelligent too.
Yes.
And that intellect is that intuitive as well. I agree with you 100%.
If you don't have some existential dread, there's something not right. Because
no, exactly. It's you're connected to yourself and you're connected to the planet and the world. Seriously. I mean, I look at it as you're not walking around unconscious. You know what I mean? You're really present. And it may sound weird, but it is a gift. I think when you don't know how to funnel it, it becomes chronic.
Right.
Like the story of the character, it's like you end up not being able to do all these other things.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get on the plane. You can't, you know, whatever it is.
See, my thing, you know, you're indicating or saying that you don't take medication, and I come from a very balanced approach. I think that some people can manage it without medication. And I believe that medication can be tremendously helpful. I think it depends on,
absolutely,
it's contextual, right? So I feel like it depends on the person. And so,
yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. So
what's your
100%. Right. That's what I was going to ask you. What's your opinion on that?
No, I do. I do. I have the experience that I had with the medication wasn't a positive one. And I knew, and you're right. Some of anxiety is the chemical imbalance. And I agree with you. If you allow it to go too far, it can take you over. And that's where medication can help to bring you back to that balanced place. It didn't work for me. And so
can I ask you what medication you took?
Way back in the time, it was in the 90s. And I think what was really out there and the most popular was Prozac.
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing about it is, in things that I've read, is it takes, you know, 2 to 3 weeks is what, you know, for it to really come into effect for you. So I never even gave it any time.
Yeah, that's the thing about Prozac. And so, again, sorry to interrupt, but it actually takes about 6 weeks to work.
Yeah, I was on it for 2 days and I was so bad. I mean, my symptoms were worse than it was before.
Right.
And so of course I contributed to the medication.
Yeah.
And I was in such a desperate place.
Right.
I just said, I've got to figure this out.
Totally. And I mean, you know, it's, everything is different for every person, but for me, you know, the thing is, medication side effects are a real thing. So what happens is when you start to take medication, you will inevitably experience some level of side effects, whether it's benign or intense or whatever it is. And when I started taking Prozac when I was 18, I was at such a high level of anxiety and in such a vulnerable and desperate place that I just wanted some relief. Right.
Exactly.
And then, and so, you know, it was a brutal 6 weeks, but once it started to work, I was like, oh shit, like this is what normal people feel like, you know? Like I literally, seriously, you know, like like all the noise, like in my brain just disappeared. And I was like, well, fuck, that's what I wanted. I want that life, you know? And,
yeah, no kidding. Oh my gosh. You're so funny. It's like the synapse connected and you're like, oh,
you know? Yeah. Like angels were singing and shit. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but okay. And I mean, And that can be some other thing. It doesn't have to be that it's only medication, but I mean, studies have shown, like I'm a doctor, like studies have shown that the best combo is therapy and medication together. Right. But there are actually things that indicate that CBT is just as effective as only medication, CBT therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it does, I mean, in terms of anxiety and depression, because CBT, and I should probably find those studies and like link them here so that I'm not just talking out of my ass, but basically it shows that CBT shows you coping skills, how to deal with anxiety, and literally can change your the way that your brain works. Right?
Right. No, I've read that. And you, like you said, you pointed that out. I did not come from an environment as a child to be taught how to cope and how to be confident.
Oh, but also, so I'm sorry, I want to get back to that, but I also want to say something hilarious about antidepressants that I was talking to a friend about. Doctors don't actually know how they work. All they know, I'm serious. I'm so fucking dead ass serious. If you like scientifically, they know that they do work, but they actually don't know how.
I know. That's so funny. I've read that study too. It's hilarious, but it does help. I mean, it does something to your chemistry to where the synapses connect.
Right.
And I was on this one podcast and listening to this guy. And like you said, he was taking medication. He says, oh my gosh, this is how normal people feel.
Literally, that's my exact
Hallelujah.
Thought. That was my exact thought.
Mm-hmm.
So you were saying about coping as a child, you weren't taught coping skills.
Yeah. I just, you know, coming from the generation that I came from, women were not taught to be confident, you know, in my parents' environment, in my environment growing up, you know, I wasn't taught to the tools to cope in life, to make your own decisions, to, you know, really be grounded in yourself. And then again, being a sensitive child, it was, you know, it was a disaster recipe.
Totally.
Yeah, but I get it. And so by choosing not taking the medication and taking the route that I did, really allowed me to get to the root cause and to, you know, to heal what it is I need to heal. And to do, in order to do that, it also gave something to my son, because this stuff can be passed on. Right. I literally, and I don't know how, if you feel, I'm sure you feel this about your child as well, is you just have this profound sense of responsibility.
Yes.
And being intuitive and being in that sensitive arena, you really have a lot of compassion for mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And so I just couldn't bear in my heart and my soul for this little child that I love so much. I just thought, you know what? I don't want this person to suffer like I do.
Yeah. No.
Or did.
Yeah. It's so weird. Like I've been meaning to talk about this because it was traumatic, but the other day I was at a restaurant and I witnessed domestic violence. And it was like super triggering, and there were children there, and like the cops were called. It was intense. And, you know, like we were talking about being a sensitive person and seeing that this couple fighting and like physically fighting in front of children, and then, you know, the mother crying. And like, I kept thinking, I mean, I believe that things happen for a reason. Like, I do. I believe that I was put in that situation for some reason, right? And it's a long story I'll tell you after we stop the podcast. But basically, what I learned from that, or what I took away, is that being a parent is a tremendous responsibility, and that I am now even more mindful of like being kind to my kid, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yes. No, it's so true, because you witness these and it triggers you in a way that you have this empathy, not only for yourself, but for the people around you that you love.
Yeah.
And it makes you a better person.
Totally.
So it's weird. I mean, anxiety is kind of like this gift. I don't know if you see it like that.
No,
but
I do.
It's just,
No, 100%. Yes.
Yeah, it just it puts you in a place that makes you real, and you know the people that are around you are real friends. and because you're real,
because you now track that. Yep, because they're going to, I mean, this is like a colloquialism, but they're going to put up with your shit. You know what I mean? Really, like, honestly, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, is I learned after I was real with myself and was like, you know what, I have these issues, that the people that stuck around were really my friends.
They are the ones that love you. Absolutely. So, like I said, you know, it's just this wonderful gift. I mean, it's not a wonderful gift, but you know what I'm talking about. It's just, it makes you real and it makes the people around you real. And it's real stuff because, you know, in my book, I say there's 43 million Americans that suffer from anxiety. I know that it's higher than that. Every day it's higher just because, you know, just how the world is unraveling.
That's true, but
it's a global epidemic. It's crazy.
And the thing is, it's probably more than that because there's still shame, right? And there's still people that can't say, I have this. I mean, that's what I think. You know, and I think my viewpoint is that a lot of people have mental illness, but statistically it's underreported. So, you know, I don't know the statistic, I'm making shit up, but like 5% of people have bipolar disorder, but that's actually not true because a lot of people are self-medicating and not reporting it.
No, so no, you've touched on an area that is so true. That's why that 43 million, you know, Americans that suffer from anxiety, that number is probably tenfold higher than that. Like you said, because there's shame around that and people aren't talking about it. They're not reporting it. They're not showing up. And how anxiety, you know, shows up in the body is also too, is headaches, insomnia, muscle tension, you know, so people just think I'm overworked. Which we are.
But, yeah, know, no, exactly.
It's just, yeah. So it's unreported. So
it is underreported. But at the same time, you know, I think that it's something to be mindful and careful of because I had severe postpartum depression with my daughter. And, and after that, that was the first time I actually experienced hypomania because I knew something was wrong and it was a very crazy experience, pun intended, but I did see a neurologist because I was having these physical symptoms and I didn't know what the fuck was wrong with me. And the neurologist was so condescending and said, Sarah, you really have to calm down because this is just anxiety. And you know what? That is so condescending and not helpful because here's the thing. It might be anxiety. It might not be, right? But if it is, saying just anxiety is undermining how severe it can feel and how much pain you're experiencing physiologically and emotionally. So I feel that that's dangerous.
No, it is. It's very dangerous and people don't take it seriously. And I think, you know, in our conversation, you know, there's a time when there is medication that's great. And there's a time when it's just overprescribed.
Yes.
It's like they're not taking it. So here, just come on, you're just take it.
Right.
You know, this is a Band-Aid. It's going to help
totally.
Your owie.
And that helped. No, that actually I had to fight against because they did give me something and they were like, you should really stay on this. And I was like, fuck no, I don't want this shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the thing is, no, I mean, really, like I'm very, very cautious about the medications that I take and I research them and I know what the fuck is going in my body because that's the thing is you have to be your own advocate. Like, for example, my psychiatrist will not prescribe benzos unless it's like an emergency, right? So he's not giving people Xanax and shit because you know why? You know what the thing about Xanax is and all those benzos? You know how addictive they are? They're like as addictive. I mean, I'm speculating, but they're as addictive as like illegal drugs.
Yeah. No kidding. No, I've read that too. Yeah, I've read Well, yeah, you see it all the time. I mean, people dying overdose or,
I'm actually talking from empirical evidence. I just realized that because I'm not talking out of ignorance, because I did work in a residential treatment center as a vocational counselor, and I counseled addicts, and so many of them came in addicted to benzos.
Wow. So yeah, you've had it firsthand in terms of your job.
Yeah.
That's an eye opener.
It really was. And the thing is that I knew that before, and then it was confirmation, like seeing that people were saying, I'm addicted to Xanax. I was like, I'm not going near that shit. Like, really, like after seeing
kidding.
You know?
Yeah. No, I know. Every time I went into the doctor for some reason, they would prescribe me something. And so what I did in lieu of that is I kind of searched the natural path.
Yep.
And I did have one and talked a little bit about it. And it was more about, okay, instead of prescribing something to you, let's look at your diet.
Yeah.
Let's look at your relationships.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's look at your,
Here's the issue I have with that. I think that's wonderful. But the issue I have is that I wish that that was covered by insurance. You know what I mean? Like, listen, if I were rich, right, I wouldn't do any of these pharmaceuticals. I would be seeing naturopaths. I mean, I do see an acupuncturist, and he does take my insurance, which is fantastic. But like, why are naturopaths $200 a visit? No, like that's unacceptable. And they all need to be covered by insurance, all of them.
No, I agree with you. I do. And it's a shame that they're not, because, it's like the journey that I took was more of the alternative route.
Sure.
Or it is the alternative route.
Yep.
And yeah, it took a lot more time and investment, emotionally in myself, the commitment and the courage to do this journey. Whereas, if I would have taken the time and muscled through all of those side effects of the medication that I was on, I could have, seen the light per se. But I don't know, there's just something in me that I knew it was just so much deeper than the anxiety.
Yeah.
And I just really wanted to feel better and
yep.
be a better parent.
Right.
I
think that's fantastic. And I really wish, and I do believe in naturopathic medicine. I just wish that it wasn't so expensive. That's really my whole thing.
No, I know.
That's
I agree with you. It's so terribly expensive.
It's outrageous. And it's like, why doesn't I honestly think, and I mean, this is going to sound paranoid, but I don't give a shit. It's a conspiracy. Because the pharmaceutical companies want to make money. And so, if they make this shit covered by insurance, then like Pfizer will be bankrupt, right? Because.
No, I know. That's such a subject. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
It's such a subject.
I could go
it's
on about
huge.
That. I mean, and again, like people are just be like, whatever, she's bipolar and paranoid. But like, no, for real, like it really is a thing. If they legalize marijuana, like, again, all these motherfuckers would be out of business. I mean, seriously.
No, I know. Well, isn't marijuana legal?
It's legal in certain states, right? It's not legal where I am. I mean, isn't it legal?
Not in New York. I think you're next.
I'm hoping, but we also have an unreasonably conservative government here. So, I mean, like, I don't know.
So true.
It's ridiculous.
I know. And talking about the pharmaceutical industry, we're going to have to go underground, Sarah.
Seriously. We're going to do like, it's going to be like the Underground Railroad of like.
No,
naturopathic
medicine. We're going to have that conversation. It's going to have to be underground.
Yeah, I mean, because like this is being tapped right now. Like that's what's happening.
No, I know. Yes. We better be careful.
So we are actually out of time, which is insane. But
bummer. I know. It's so much fun. You are so fun. And I love New York, by the way.
Yay.
I love New York.
Well, you're amazing. Can you tell us, first of all, just like a brief advice that you would give to somebody that is dealing with anxiety, like what would you tell that person?
Oh yeah. I would tell them, your listeners, that you're not alone and there are resources out there to help you heal. And don't isolate yourself. Share it. you know, share it with your friends and your family. So, because the thing about anxieties is it's so easy to isolate mm-hmm. yourself. And then that just makes everything so worse.
Totally.
Feeling alone is just not the greatest thing. And, you know, find people that you trust. You know, find a good doctor. Listen to these podcasts. I've listened to a lot of your podcasts. They're great.
Thank you.
They're very helpful. You know, buy my book. There's so much help out there.
Yeah. So where can we find your book? Where can we buy it? Where can we follow you online? Tell us all the things.
Yeah, you bet. Follow me on Facebook, MelissaA.Woods. You can get me on Twitter as well. You can buy my book on Amazon, and I'm just about ready to get into Barnes and Noble. So,
amen. You know, and actually,
we
can talk about that in a minute because I have some tips on that. So, what's your Twitter so that people can follow you on Twitter?
It's at Melissa Woods. It's at Melissa A. Woods is what it is.
Okay.
@lowercase a lowercase Woods.
Well, we're going to include all of that in the description. Thank you so much for coming on.
Sarah, thank you. It's just been enjoyable.
You know what? Totally the same.
You made me laugh this early in the morning, so this is awesome.
I know. Well, I'm just, I am a ridiculous human being, so I try. Thank you so much. Yay.